Short disclaimer. This podcast is in no way affiliated with the upcoming Outlander series or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 45 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander. So, announcements this week. I gotta say, it's been a pretty busy week for us at the podcast, so it was kind of a delightfully uneventful week with announcements.
Yeah, I'm not upset.
No, definitely not upset. It's been hectic. We had things on Sunday, we had things on Monday, we had things on Tuesday, just kind of filling in our calendar leading up to the premiere date. So we've been so busy. I'm like, oh God, it's Sunday, we have to do announcements. So I'm so glad that it was a brief one. That being said, we got a couple of new photos from the Outlander Stars Instagram account. We have a rider on a horse. It looks like Murtaugh, but I can't really be certain. But it does look like Murtaugh.
He looks like he's wearing like black wool knee highs or thigh highs.
Little schoolgirl socks, you mean?
Well, they're definitely thigh highs, but yeah.
I wonder if those are actual boots or if those are just like boot covers. Oh.
That's true. I don't know.
It's hard to tell.
But in the description, in the little blurb that Stars included for the image, it was a shout out to the costume department, which is crazy, crazy talented.
Yeah. We also got a picture of what looks like the Oregon Trail.
The wagon train.
They're all going to die of dysentery. I wonder if they're going to have to ford a river or any of the other things. Do you remember Oregon Trail?
To get to grandmother's house? I mean, what?
No, on the Oregon Trail.
I don't think I ever saw that.
All those options. It was this little, like, very pixelated game we used to play.
Oh, I never did.
In elementary school.
I didn't
And
play
we
it.
Played it on Mac computers, and it was like the green screen, so it didn't even really have color.
Oh.
But you had to, it was like a strategy game where you started off, you decided who you were and what year, that decided how much money you had, and then based on the money you had to get supplies and things, and you'd start your trail from, like, someplace in the Midwest and go all the way to Oregon was the goal. And for the most part, most of you died of dysentery or smallpox. Or you'd come to a river and you had to decide whether or not it was deep enough to ford. You had to basically float it across the river. Or if you were going to try to make it across the river without, you know, just walking. And you'd have to do that based on, because you'd get to the river edge and it would say how deep the water was. And this, that, and the other, and you'd have to make that decision whether or not it was deep enough or shallow enough. And sometimes you didn't make it. I mean, that was the whole thing. It was like, the whole, I think, goal of it was to show you that, hey, everyone did this whole thing, and everyone dies. And,
pretty much.
And it's like, when we looked up, like, dysentery, I was like, oh my God, these people died of diarrhea. Like, that's what dysentery amounts to, is just diarrhea. Anyway, that's a side note. So that's what I think of whenever I see covered wagons as Oregon Trail. Is so dysentery.
I just think of Pioneers, which I guess the Oregon Trail was.
There you go. We got the first four episode titles. Well, I think we've had eight titles. But I could not find the other four. But we do have the first four air dates, which was silly because, you know, they're back-to-back, the first four. So the first four weekends starting August 9th, the 16th, 23rd, and the 30th. And the titles we have are Sassenach, which is 101. 102 is Castleliac, which I think we already knew those.
Yeah, they were on the first pages of the script from New York Comic Con.
And we got episode 103, which is The Way Out. And then episode 104, which is The Gathering, which I believe is when we will be seeing our beloved authoress on screen.
I think so.
In The Gathering. So that's exciting. We also found out that the tie-in novel is officially out for purchase. So if you're one of those people that needs to have every version of the book out there, it is available. Go on out there and get your own copy. So this week,
we're going to take a week off for the read-along.
Correct.
And we have a special guest.
We do have a special guest.
We'd like to welcome Leah Hensley of audiogals.net to the Outlander podcast. Leah, welcome. How are you?
Thank you for having me. I'm thrilled to talk with you today about audiobooks, but especially the upcoming Outlander series.
Oh, yeah, we might have a little interest in that, too. How and when did the idea of an Audiogals website come about?
I guess we need to start with the beginning, which is my background in writing about audiobooks actually started at AAR with the Speaking of Audiobooks column. It was 5 years ago, and it actually was a one-time blog piece titled Speaking of Audiobooks, It's All About the Narrator. We had such a positive response from romance listeners. There really was nowhere for romance listeners to go online to just talk about these books that we started featuring columns twice a month. And then we started the Romance Audiobooks Goodreads group for discussion between the columns. I met Brenda, one of the three audio gals, through Speaking of Audiobooks years ago, and we discovered that we had a lot in common when it came to our taste in books and thoughts on the audiobook industry, and found ourselves forming a friendship, despite the fact that we have never really met face-to-face. Brenda reviewed for Speaking of Audiobooks as well, and she played a big role on the technical side there for us. She and I started dreaming and started envisioning a site where we could talk about romance audiobooks every day of the week. We felt like we were the beginning of a perfect team, as she loves the technical side, you know, all those nuts and bolts, and she knew how to build a website. And I love being on the front side of the site and writing. But we knew we needed a third partner to get it all done. And thankfully, Melinda, one of our fellow reviewers, agreed to come on board as the third gal. She has both technical expertise and the ability to write a really good Wicked review.
You mentioned the gifts or the different things that each of your partners can bring to the website, bring to the table. Tell us how the site has developed or changed over the years.
In the beginning, all of the gals reviewed audiobooks. That's Brenda, Melinda, and Leah. And we had two guest reviewers as well, Katrin and Carrie. Now all of our roles have become more defined. Now all of our reviewers are reviewers. No more guest reviewers. We have 11 reviewers total. Brenda is our technical genius. Melinda has the strong voice in reviewing and helps with the editing. And I'm more the spokesperson for the site. And we have, from the very beginning, featured narrator interviews. We had 5 narrator friends help us kick off our launch. We have also run recorded interviews with authors and narrators together as a group and individually, and ran a giveaway last year, 8 months of audiobooks from Audible. And this year we're running a Kindle Fire giveaway to feature immersion reading. And we also get in on lobbying for good books too.
By lobbying, do you mean audiogals.net is somewhat political in the industry?
Well, we like to think we have an opinion. We consider ourselves part of the larger audiobook industry and that we are totally dedicated to audiobooks. We even get involved in lobbying for quality narrators and decent production. In 2013, we ran a narrators forum to discuss charting a path to success. I had written an article that had gotten a lot of attention about untrained narrators performing really good books and the disappointing result that you have from this narrator not doing a book justice. Therefore, we had 6 narrators agreed to join us. Those were Holter Graham, Kate Redding, Tavia Gilbert, Barbara Rosenblatt, Karen White, and Susan Erickson discussed the industry and the basics of training needed to successfully perform an audiobook. We plan on continuing to host other such forums.
Is this something that you have already started thinking about for this year, or is it something that you might want to take a year or so more to plan to do another one?
You know, we promised to do another one in 2014, and actually it's been such a busy year, I haven't thought about that. That was our second narrators forum that we had featured. The first one had been at Speaking of Audiobooks, and they're always a blast. They always get a lot of attention, and narrators appreciate the opportunity to get together and speak publicly.
So for you personally, how long have you been interested in audiobooks?
I have listened to fictional audiobooks for 12 years now. Brenda and Melinda have been listening for approximately the same time period as well, although I think Brenda probably has listened the longest. We have seen the industry literally explode the last 5 years. I'd like to comment about a common misperception about audio listeners. We hardly ever just sit and listen to an audiobook. I can't do that. I have to be doing more than one thing at a time. I call it an otherwise occupied activity. And you will find that most listeners exercise, they do housework, they do laundry, they walk the dog, they garden, they drive. They do anything but sit still and listen to an audiobook.
Well, I know that I did a lot of data entry at my last job, and I used to kill audiobooks every week. Just, I'd be doing data entry and listening to audiobooks. I could go through sometimes 2-3 books in a week in a 40-hour work week.
Yes. I didn't realize I was talking to a fellow audio fan.
Oh, my God. Are you kidding me? Really? To be fair, I guess it's not necessarily obvious. I will say this. I have always loved audiobooks, but up until 2008, the only way I was able to listen to them was to go through the library and get, many years ago, a whole big box of cassette, or, you know, it's since the 90s about, get a slightly smaller box of CDs. I'll still do that if I need to, if it's something that is only available in that way. But since about 2008, I bought my first iPod. It was an iPod Nano, purple. I still have it. And ever since then, I did purchase a few audiobooks. I was going on a trip to Europe, and I wanted to make sure that I had plenty of content to keep myself occupied on plane rides, train rides, you name it. And I did purchase a few audiobooks, but I also discovered podcasts. Before then, actually, but I really started listening to them more, 2008, 2009. But around that time as well, I also began seeing that my local library had these audiobooks that were downloadable. And I could check them out from my home. And I didn't have to go into the library. And So I've never turned back since then.
Well, I think that Netflix really changed the game on a lot of things. Because before Netflix, everything, you were going to, now I know that Netflix doesn't do audiobooks, but before Netflix came around, if you wanted to rent a movie or buy a movie, you had to go somewhere, and you had to go there and look for it and pick it out and take it home, or you had to buy it. Whereas with Netflix, and they started just sending them to your house, and they would pay for the shipping, and you'd send them back when you were done, other people started getting onto that whole system, and then you started finding the same kind of rental features for video games, and then I started finding them for audiobooks, which was really handy to me because audiobooks are really expensive if you buy them. But I used to belong to one audiobook
club or online
club that was a lot like Netflix, where you'd have a whole list of audiobooks you wanted to listen to, and then when you'd listen to one, and then when you're done, you'd mail it back, and they'd send you another one on your list. So I think that before that happened, it was a lot harder for me to get audiobooks because I didn't want to buy them, and that's almost the only way you could get them.
Well, you know, back in my day, whenever I started listening to romance, it was actually my beginning of audiobooks as well. I mean, I had listened to instructional audiobooks way back when, 30 years ago. But I did it for one reason. I had to endure time on a treadmill. I mean, TV and music just weren't doing it for me. And there were very few fictional audiobooks available at the time. That was about 12 years ago. And it was still a time, as you mentioned, of cassette tapes. And there were no digital downloads. And CDs never really made it, in my mind, big as audiobooks, only because you couldn't really exercise with one well, you know.
No.
You could put in your little, what was it? I had one of those sports little audio cassette players that, you know, I put on my belt and off I'd go. But a place to buy audiobooks back then was eBay.
Oh my
you
gosh.
Could buy a book, let's say Brilliance would put out a new book, a Jennifer Cruzy or something like that, and you could run over there and you could buy it. They'd send it to you and that'd be all great, but they didn't have the really good books. And so I have found, after I got to know a number of people in the audiobook community, that many of us used to hang out at eBay because that's where the really good books, they were used library copies. We could not purchase them new. And I actually purchased Outlander that way. I purchased the first 4 books that way in the Outlander series And I waited and waited, and I had to save my money. I asked for birthday money because each of those first four in the Outlander series each cost me $80 to $100 on eBay. Ooh. So back in the day, it really was expensive. I know what you mean. And you talk about time. People often don't think of Outlander in hours. They think of it in pages. And when it came to actual listening, Outlander is 33 hours long. Well, that means those are 23 cassettes to be loaded and unloaded from my boombox.
Oh,
and that's
what
I thought it was, a boombox.
Yep. However, cassette tapes were good for that because you knew that each side of a cassette tape was about 30 minutes.
Exactly.
So it was probably really good for working out if you were like, I'm going to go get on the treadmill for 30 minutes. I'm going to listen to this side of the tape.
Exactly. That is exactly right. And it was your break. You know, if you were doing something really hard and you needed a break, you know, you were waiting for that audio cassette to just cut off. But Dragonfly and Amber, 39 hours, 27 cassettes. Voyager, almost 44 hours. 30 cassettes, and Drums of Autumn is almost 45 hours with 33 cassettes. These containers, as you probably remember, were big and plastic, and you had pages of audio cassettes that you flipped. Just for the fun of it, I went up to my closet where I just cannot get rid of my original Outlander audio cassette tape sets. I have them sitting next to me, and they are 3 feet tall.
Oh, Lord. Wasn't A Breath of Snow and Ashes the longest book thus far?
Let's look here. Yes, 58 hours.
Oh!
58 hours. Now, Fiery Cross is 55, so they're not all that far. But fortunately, by the time that one came along, A Breath of Snow and Ashes, they weren't doing audio cassettes anymore. It was all digital downloads for the most part. So.
What was Echo?
Echo.
We'll have it on our Audible app now.
Let me say, I'll say the others. The Fiery Cross is 55 hours. A Breath of Snow and Ashes, 58 hours. And Echo in the Bone, 46 hours. And Written in My Own Heart's Blood is 45 hours.
So it's around the length of Drums of Autumn?
Yes, yes. And that was, you know, of course, considered so very long.
I know. And then just A Breath of Snow and Ashes was like, or actually, I guess the Fiery Cross was like, ha ha.
No, I seriously just introduced somebody to the series, like, probably in the last couple months, and he was complaining about, he's like, gosh, that was such a long book. It just outlined it.
I know.
Just wait.
Just wait. You know,
if you're scared of length, this is not the thing for you.
Exactly.
You know, he was like, no, it's really good. It was just so long. And I was like, you have not seen long yet. You just
wait till number, was it six, right? Number six.
Yeah.
Well, you know, another interesting thing about the Outlander series in audio format is I wrote an entire column at Speaking of Audiobooks in late 2009 featuring the Outlander series. And we had done a group listen of Outlander, and then I summarized it, and then I went ahead and I did the whole four books because, you know, Outlander is considered the audiobook. We consider it a romance. And we consider it the best that there has been. And that is both in narration and, of course, in the content. But back then, whenever I wrote that, I only included the first four in the series because that's all that was available to the consumer, although there were 7 audiobooks published at that time. Recorded books for some reason, and we don't know the reason. It probably was something beyond the consumer's mind. I think it had something to do with digital rights. Had the Fiery Cross, A Breath in Snow and Ashes, and An Echo in the Bone out, but consumers could not purchase them.
So they could only get them through libraries?
Yes, that's right. And I think that there were certain rental programs, like you mentioned, where they could be rented. But if you bought one, you probably bought an illegal, you know, booted copy somewhere.
And you said Echo in the Bone is on that list? Because I downloaded that from iTunes.
Well, now, about 3 or 4 years ago, Recorded Books was able to release them all. Whatever was prohibiting them, I think it had something to do with the abridged version. It was very popular, and it, too, but, of course, we don't listen to abridged books.
No, that's a four-letter word.
Yeah, we do not listen to that.
It's not.
I don't
Even Diana was not happy with the idea of abridgment of a book.
Well, what's the? I mean, it's like it's not the book. You're passing off something as the story, but you're gonna cut off stuff that's important. It's like when they had those Reader's Digest condensed books that they send around. And you'd be like, oh, I read War and Peace. It only took me like 30 minutes. And they're like, that's because you only read the condensed
version. Yeah, and I bet you didn't like it very much either. Did it?
Lord,
but anyway, I think it had something to do, there was an abridged versions of all of those running. And I think there was some rights that the abridged version had that held up the release of the unabridged titles. But anyway, because of that, I have not listened to the fifth book in the series. And that is something I'm getting ready to treat myself to. So
I know I've read them all multiple times. I've listened to Outlander, DIA. Outlander is just Outlander. But for everything else, I think, and I know it's common, especially with social media now, too, because it's just so long. When I speak of the books, I sometimes use kind of the acronyms for it. But, so Outlander, we never call anything but Outlander. Dragonfly and Amber, we always call DIA just because once you get past one or two or three books, the titles are, they're not too long, it's just that we abbreviate everything.
No, but the titles are also getting longer.
They are.
They are.
Written in my own head. Fiery Cross, the Fiery Cross, okay.
That one was short.
Yeah, Outlander is Outlander. Dragonfly and Amber we call DIA. Voyager is also the same, Voyager. Drums of Autumn, DOA.
Okay.
Fiery Cross, TFC. A Breath of Snow and Ashes, ABOSAA.
Oh!
I'm not kidding. And then, of course, after that is Echo. Echo. And then MOBI is obviously not only an acronym or an abbreviation, it's also, it leaves out some of the words, but that's okay. We all know what it means.
Yes, well, I actually just read for the first time a couple of days ago why it is MOBI. I couldn't understand. What is MOBI? What? Finally, now I understand.
It's easier to understand if you know that it started as MOHB.
Whenever I listened to the first four the first time, it was all, of course, with the audio tape cassette. And then after that, I purchased each at Audible. And I know that books can be expensive, but I have a little Audible membership, and I bought each of those for $11 each. And I'll buy the rest of them for that, too, just because, you know, I get my little 2 credits a month, and that's the cost of the credits.
There are different ways. What we intended to do was many times Amazon will allow you to purchase the ebook for the Kindle, and then literally on checkout it asks you if you want to add the audiobook, because of course Amazon is affiliated or owns Audible now.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know what you're talking about with the Kindle copy and the Audible copy is the immersion reading I talked about, the reason we're giving away a Kindle Fire, and it takes a while from what we've heard for the book to be absolutely totally synced to the narration, because it has to be word perfect almost. Because what you do is, if you're reading the immersion reading, like on a Kindle Fire, you can have the words highlighting on the page as it speaks them to you. So if there's a difference in the two, it can't follow along exactly. So I know that there is often a wait, and that book is so long, it might not be done yet.
Okay, that would make sense. So you're not saying, if I understand you correctly, you're not, the text is not changed, the audio is not changed, it's just the syncing of the speed with which things are highlighted.
Well, that could be it, but mostly it's because in a book that is 45 hours long, the exceptional Davina Porter may have mispronounced a word somewhere, or they may have edited it incorrectly. I mean, they just have to go word by word. From what I understand, now my understanding is not perfect. If you review books, it's especially excellent.
Oh, gosh.
Because you can stop and highlight it on the Kindle. And, you know, since I only review audiobooks, and I don't review that much anymore, I end up writing about audiobooks rather than reviewing them. But our reviewers have found it to be very helpful because they can highlight wherever they need to, you know, whatever they want to note in their review. Another interesting aspect of immersion reading, which I believe is called a whisper sync, that I'm moderator of the Romance Audiobooks group. We actually started that as part of Speaking of Audiobooks way back when to have a place to talk in between columns. It's very active group. It's, we're getting close to 800 members. And we have a thread about WhisperSync deals. And the last few months, they've been talking a lot about the Outlander series and how inexpensive they have been. I mean, they were like $2.99
one,
and maybe $1.99 for the other. I know a few of our people had started complaining because they said, the price has gone up, the price has gone up. And we're like, well, that's the way the world of publishing works. People are going to be buying to get up there. So I would like to say that we're a romance audiobooks group. And although others don't consider Outlander a romance audiobook, it falls within the guidelines. And therefore, romance readers get very excited about it. It's just an exceptional listen. I've not read any of the books. I've only listened to them. But I honestly can't imagine reading one because Davina Porter is just so exceptional at performing these roles. I mean, Jamie is forever, even after the series, I'm going to have a hard time hearing Jamie any other way than the way Davina Porter portrays him in these audio books.
I think you used the best term. I have nothing more to say about her. She is just exceptional. She's one of a kind.
Yes.
So who has been your favorite author to interview?
Well, for laugh out loud funny, I'd have to say Ann Stewart. I mean, that woman is a woman. But overall, I'd say Pamela Clare. She writes romantic suspense and historical romance. And I have long been an admirer of her historical writing, which is rich and full of historical detail. I'm sort of a history buff, and when I saw that her historical titles were scheduled to be released in audio format, she agreed to an in-depth interview, and we were going to talk all about the background that she does on her historical titles. Well, she and I talked on the phone, and we planned it together, and she shares such a detailed experience of how she researched this, and her knowledge of the subject matter and her travels to research are just quite impressive, and I was fascinated throughout the whole process. So Pamela wins the prize.
Which would you say would be your favorite book that you've gotten to review?
Susan Elizabeth Phillips' older titles are great fun to listen to. I mean, there are about 10 that I have listened to a half a dozen times each. Not only is the writing fun and in a very delicious way, but they are narrated by Anna Fields. She's considered a pioneer in romance narration and a favorite of just about everybody who listens to her. Those reviews literally flow out of me. I wrote a couple for our Favorites Month that we had in March, and I just had a blast writing them. But I also have to say that Outlander was another favorite to review, and it's not because we're talking today. It is, after all, the best experience I have had listening to an audiobook. As I said, Davina Porter is divine. She's one of the best out there. There's just so much to say in a review, yet you have to choose your words wisely to avoid spoilers of any sort.
My two favorite, if I had to pick a favorite female and a favorite male narrator, hands down, female would be Davina Porter for every reason that we've already mentioned. And my favorite male narrator would be Phil Gigante. Oh my gosh.
Oh, we so agree. He is.
Oh my God. His voice, his JZB is beyond. I can't almost listen to it because it does. Things.
What book is that?
His Jericho Barron is a character
from the series.
Oh my gosh.
Oh yes, Phil was our first.
Holy moly. The one thing I will say about Phil Gigante is that I'm so glad that in that series, in the Fever series, they did get a female to do the female part.
Oh yeah.
Because I enjoyed the back and forth between them. But I listened to a series that it was a romance novel. I think I don't remember who the author was, but he was narrating it, and it's got all of like female leads. He was doing all the female voices, and I couldn't take it seriously. Like, they were all, like, the worst, like, female stereotype voices I've ever heard in my life. And I was like, oh, my God.
He has really criticized that in the romance community because he really kind of makes his female character sound a bit comical. But, you know, romance listeners will pay that price gladly to be able to hear him as a hero. I mean, they just love to listen to him.
The Fever series, bye.
Karen Marie Mining.
Karen Marie Mining.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I think I read the first. There's three, right? I think I read
five.
The first one.
5, and there's more coming.
Oh, I don't think I read all 5. I think I read 4 or something.
Well, Joyce Bean narrated the first 3. Natalie Roth and Phil Gigante narrated 4 and 5.
And I didn't know that was happening until I started listening to the 4th book, and then all of a sudden there was a dude in my head.
Exactly.
What just happened?
I agree. It was kind of shocking.
She texted me. First of all, I have good taste, but I guess I don't have good juju. I don't know, because Outlander, the Karen Marie Monning series, all these things that I love. Summer's the one who told me about everything. So she definitely listens more. She works too, but I've had a lot of grad school over the years and more time in school. So I have had a little bit less time, you know, outside of work or evening wise, but she definitely is a good go-to person for what's latest, greatest, what she likes. I definitely trust if she likes something, I there's never anything that she suggested that I haven't liked. And she told me, I think I was already listening to it or reading it, I think, but when she mentioned, I don't know if she texted me or emailed me, but she's like, Ginger, you have got to hear this dude. And I went, well, it's okay, can wait. I mean, seriously. And then once I heard him and I
played
in the library. Well, you did, but I also got it from the library and I listened to all of them, or at least the last few. Oh, my goodness. It was... Karen Marie Monning, and rightly so, was capitalizing upon everyone's insane attraction to this voice. She had him do, like, she would write these special little featurettes and put them on her website so you could download or listen to them. Oh, my gosh. I mean...
Yeah, she had rings. She had rings for your telephone that he...
Oh, my gosh. I mean, seriously, that man is his... Yeah, it's a little... We can't really go into too much detail because him and, yeah.
Well, we interviewed him over at Speaking of Audiobooks back when The Last Fever, I believe, was being released. And we had a big brilliance giveaway at the time. And I want you to know that is at Speaking of Audiobooks, we've had more at Audio Gals, but Speaking of Audiobooks, that is the largest number of entries we have ever had because he filled Gigante so much. Now, I will say that there are 2 other male narrators that I think are even better because they can do those types of male voices. What they do is they don't try to act out the female. Victor Slezak does a number of Sandra Browns, and then Laura Kinzel, she's a very well-known historical writer. She just had Nicholas Bolton, an English writer, record, I think it was 6 or 7 of her books this last year. They won our Best Romance Audiobook over at Audio Gals Award, and he's superb, too. So I highly recommend both of those.
Summer is feverishly taking notes. She's going to check them out. You mentioned Outlander a number of times. How did you actually first find it? Was it on a recommendation? Did you stumble across it?
Well, I have been on staff at All About Romance for 9 years. And I have written for them in that time, and although I've mostly just written the Speaking of Audiobooks column the last 5 years, I'm still doing that. But I was always in on Romance News, and I saw a lot of audiobook discussions. It's a very large site. I think it has something like 25 million page views a year. And so you had just a lot of discussions about romance books going on all the time, and Outlander was always one of the favorite. Well, I'm not one to read a really, really, really long book. I mean, 500 pages and I'm done. But listening is a different deal because I can listen to it all day long. I don't have to sit still. You know, whenever I have a few minutes, I can just turn it on. And I thought Outlander, from these discussions, sounded absolutely so fascinating. At the time, historical romance was my very favorite genre, and I just, and to know that the story lasted more than one book was very fascinating to me. So I actually decided it would be one of my very first audiobook purchases, and that's the reason I was at eBay.
Oh, that makes sense. That makes sense. Now, it seems Outlander, as you have mentioned, and as we've seen, and we've chatted a little bit behind the scenes, Outlander is a favorite of many of your team members. I know you said you haven't actually met necessarily the entire team face-to-face, but have you guys ever, in a Google Hangout or with a number of you face-to-face, have you ever just sat down to just talk about Outlander?
Not as such, we have not, but we do a lot of writing back and forth to each other, especially Melinda and Brenda and I. And Melinda and I share a very deep love for the Outlander series. She more than even me, because she's up with the series, and she right now is listening to Moby to write the Audio Gals review. We have another one of our reviewers who's listening as well to write the Speaking of Audiobooks review over at AAR. I mean, we had more than one person crying out to review this book. But we talk a lot about what we have really enjoyed about it. Melinda and I actually had a written discussion that we published at Audio Gals right after we launched the site about, you know, our love of Outlander. We have written about it for the public. We've had it reviewed. But one of the things about Outlander, it's such a great audiobook that it's considered the golden standard of romance audio. And when we ran a favorite romance audiobooks poll over at Speaking of Audiobooks in 2011, I mean, it won so many categories. And so it's always there for us to talk about and refer back to as just that golden book that really all others need to strive to match. But in that audiobooks poll, we had around 30 categories, and Outlander won favorite romance audiobook of all time, favorite historical romance, favorite romance audiobook hero, and favorite romance audiobook couple. And the next year, we ran another poll, and I knew what was going to happen. All audio, you know, all the Outlander fans back again. And there were other two, the Susan Elizabeth Phillips that I mentioned earlier, that I love her contemporary romances. She was one that a lot of people voted for. And then J.D. Robb's in-depth series got a lot, too. But Outlander was by far the highest. So the next year when we had our audiobook poll, I called it Beyond the Winners. I said, okay, guys, Outlander wins, okay? And said, so does Susan Elizabeth Phillips, and so does in-depth series. Now let's talk about all the other audiobooks you have enjoyed.
Now, you mentioned J.D. Robb's In-Death series, and that is Suzanne Erickson, correct?
Yes, it is.
I think I maybe read the first one, but I have listened. I'm like on number 19 or 20. They're all extremely enjoyable, but you do kind of, after 19 or 20 of them, you do kind of find her formula, right? You understand that she introduces certain things, and around chapter 20, 21, the bad guy's going to either be caught or found out or whatever.
Exactly.
So Susan Erickson, she's amazing.
She's won an Audi once or twice for her performance.
Oh, my gosh. There was, I mean, she's always entertaining, but there was one scene, and I'm not sure which book it was in that series, but it was not number 19 or 20. It was in the one where, have you listened to them?
I've only listened to the first four. Aren't there 37 or so now?
Something like that, yeah. There is one scene in one of the books. Eve Dallas, of course, is trying to find the people who killed this little girl's family. And this little girl was in her home, and she left her bed to go get like a midnight snack or something, and she knew she wasn't supposed to. And it was only because she left her bed to go get a snack that she escaped being murdered.
Mm-hmm.
So she was hiding out in her kitchen or something at night, and these people came in and basically assassinated her family. But anyway, later on, there's a scene where she is taken, and it just grips my throat right now. There's a scene where she's taken to say goodbye to her mom and dad, who are in the morgue, and Eve Dallas is with her. And of course, you know, if you know about Eve and her parentage,
mm-hmm.
Eve, oh my goodness, and just the way, yes, it's J.D. Robb's writing, of course, we all give credit there, but the way Susan Erickson does this scene is brilliant. This little girl couldn't have been more than 7 or 8, and she is saying her last goodbye to her parents in this morgue, trying to say, you know, it is just, whew. Susan Erickson is also one of my favorites.
Well, and that's the reason, one of our goals is to turn print readers into audio readers. Because when a narrator really knows his or her game, he can lift the book to a higher level. Just like I imagine Susan with that performance made that even more spectacular for you.
Oh, 100%. Mm-hmm. I think it would have been very touching, but it would not have touched me as much
mm-hmm.
as it did without her, without what she brought to
mm-hmm.
it.
Well, while we're talking about narrators, you know, I had mentioned the other big winner was Susan Elizabeth Phillips, and she writes contemporary romance. That's what she writes. And a narrator, I think, of 14 of her books was Anna Fields. Have you ever listened to her? She was also known as Kate Fleming. But she was just considered it when it came to contemporary romance. And she died unexpectedly. And, I mean, the romance audiobook community mourns her loss. I mean, she was that good that we have people buying books that they don't even like the author just so they can listen to her. So narrators can really make a difference. I mean, they are the book. It's like my first Speaking of Audiobooks column, it's all about the narrator.
I'm with you. I believe it. When the website was started, how did you or your team begin making contacts to reach out with to publishers and authors, et cetera?
Because I know that as we started up, when we started the pod,
we didn't know anyone. We just knew we had a microphone and we talked into it.
And we were like, we got to make something happen with this. So it was like,
it's a growing experience.
It was so like trial and error. Yeah. Just like happening upon the right numbers to get in touch with the right people.
It can be really, really challenging. Fortunately, I had contacts, first of all, through Speaking of Audiobooks and All About Romance. And not so much that I had contacts with authors through them, but because I had been writing the column for a good period of time, when we started Audio Gals, the intent all along was to keep Speaking of Audiobooks going as a monthly column and adding Audio Gals for every day you can see something about romance audio. We wanted that continuous every day. Well, I had developed contacts with a good number of publishers because we were writing so many reviews. But in that, I had also gotten to know a good number of narrators. In the beginning, we had narrator support who would tweet us or Facebook us or whatever. And I would say the majority of our contacts were probably made just like yours. When we started Audio Gals, we started without review books. We reviewed our own books because we wanted to get a good record going for us. And after we had been reviewing the book, Audio Gals had been up for a few months, I started contacting publishers. And I would introduce our site to them, and I would provide numbers for the site once we had them. And then we reached out again to our narrator friends again and again, and they were always willing to help. But the authors, I started writing emails and making our case to authors. We have featured many authors since our launch, and there are a few key authors' interviews that really helped establish us. But those were all cold calls for me. Those were all writing the right email and just having the luck of the draw of them opening it up and liking what they saw.
So your experience somewhat similar in the beginning to ours. You did have limited kind of contacts in the beginning, maybe gave you a way into it, but you had to basically plug away and do your own thing to prove your worth and to put out the content for yourself first. And then when you had some content, you were able to approach them. And that sounds like, obviously it's worked. You guys are doing so many and have such a wide range.
We do have a good number of reviewers now. And, of course, reviewers need review books. Although our reviewers all occasionally review their own books. We get books from, I'd say, at least a dozen publishers. But I would advise anybody starting out a new site that not be a requirement up front, that they get some history behind them so that they can show the publishers what they're already doing.
Absolutely. I think it's such a catch-22. It's like you need to get the material, but to get the material, you have to show them that you're worth having the material too. So.
And then you have the reviews to show the authors
exactly that
your reviewers have cared about their work or, in our case, are really big fans of their narrators. A lot of our authors now, since we're really on a roll, come through the narrators who don't necessarily have options to get us an author interview, but we get the inside scoop, and it just starts to roll, and it starts to go, and then pretty soon the author's willing to talk to you.
on the one hand, it's not rocket science. On the other hand, it's rocket science in the sense that it can be hard work. It can be dumb luck sometimes, you know, or maybe not dumb, but it can be luck.
Well, and yeah. I will say that, you know, I came to Audio Gals with a name that was already known in romance audiobooks. And I am moderator, along with Brenda. She's co-moderator of the romance audiobook site. But I do not, that is a Speaking of Audiobooks affiliation. So I don't go in there and say, hey, go to Audio Gals. I mean, I can list it like any other blogger. We allow bloggers to go in there and say what their event is. So everybody had to find out about it through a roundabout way. But once again, my name was there that, hey, she knows something about romance audiobooks, which is helpful. But it requires a lot of cold calling. Mm-hmm. Just like any business, when you get started, you got to just put yourself out there.
Because the worst thing they can say is no, and that's then true. You're worse off than you were in the beginning.
If you already have nothing, you can't get less than nothing.
That's exactly right. Two of the authors that have brought in the greatest numbers for us, I approached that way.
Oh, wow.
I just wrote them and said, this is it, and what do you think? And one was the winner of last year's Best Romance Audiobook, and the other was the winner this year. You just have to go in with showing them what you got.
So June for you is audiobook month. How did you decide on June? Is there any significance to June? Or is it wider to, obviously, to the community?
Well, actually, the Audio Publishers Association, I'll call it the APA, it's their event. And it is a month-long campaign that is named June is Audiobook Month. That's not a sentence as much as it's a name. It's J-I-A-M. During this month, you're going to find anyone that is blogging about audiobooks, they're probably going to be featuring some sort of special event. We're involved in two blog hops. One is the APA's blog hop, and what they're doing is every day of the month, they are giving away a winner of one of the audio awards that was they were just announced a few weeks ago. We gave away one. We were actually their June 1st entry, and we gave away the first, and we'll be back in mid-month and give away another. Another one is the Spoken Freely blog hop, and that's Exy Sands. She's real active in the audiobook community. She's a narrator as well. And narrators perform little bits of poetry or books or whatever, and we're involved in that. Mid-June, we will feature our part of Spoken Freely, and Colleen Marlowe will be performing some sort of little poem for us, and then they put all these performances together into one audiobook, and they sell it, and it goes to charity. So there are those things, and then there's all sorts of giveaways. I've already told you about a couple of our things that we'll have going on, but you will find just events all over the place for June.
It was coined by the Audio Publishers Association?
Yes.
It's a wider community that wants to take part, obviously, are probably welcome, but who the publishers, the APA, as well as the companies that produce them, as well as websites and blogs such as yourself who do a lot of the reviewing, are you the key participants?
We probably are very key. Your blogs are and your sites, but like Tantor Audio, they have 50% off all their titles during the month of June for June is audiobook. Tantor just sponsored an event at Audio Gals last week, our graphic for Paranormal Romance I told you about. They actually supported that. They wanted to sponsor that event. So you have publishers actually getting involved in what the sites and the blogs are doing as well. Audio Publishers encourages everyone to spread the word. And the community, which actually isn't all that large, works together very tightly to pull it off.
That is something that, I mean, obviously we have our favorite, Davina, but I am such a fan of audiobooks. I'm a verbal process and an audio or aural learner, and I do best with both visual and aural cues.
Yes.
However, even without someone maybe being all of that aural or verbal, as you said, the best thing about the audiobook, I think, is that you can get stuff done. And when you're reading, your attention is there.
Exactly.
So tell us a little bit about the events you have. We're talking about June, and June is great. June is very important for the community. But what about your site? What is July 7th through 9th?
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. I mean, we are going to be having an event for the STARS series of Outlanders. It's going to be 3 days at least. We may go longer.
Gosh.
We will run this interview on the first of the 3 days. Then the next day, we will run an interview. I will be interviewing you all. Then we are going to have a review of Moby at that time. Believe me, it is going to take them that long to listen to it and get it written. And then we will have Melinda, our Outlander expert, will be writing something about the entire series. We may do some sort of cool giveaway. We haven't decided. I mean, we may do an Outlander series giveaway. We're still thinking about that because a good part of our audience has already listened to Outlander. So we don't know. We might get something cool for the series. We're still looking, but we'll probably put a giveaway in there as well because we are so excited. Melinda now has a hashtag for her. And is Outlander Nerd. She's posting all this stuff with Outlander Nerd all over it. So I used to learn about it from following you guys. Now I learn about it from Melinda.
Well, that's great. We'll have to check out that hashtag as well. So thank you, Leah, so much for joining us. It's been a pleasure. I could talk audiobooks, especially Divina and Outlander, any day.
Well, I want to thank you all for having me. I, too, love to talk audiobooks, and now I am looking forward to my opportunity to get to interview you all.
We look forward to it so much. We're so excited. Thank you again so much.
Well, thank you for having us and for me to talk about AudioGal.
Anytime. Anything to support the industry and books, and because reading is key.
Okay.
I was going to say books are key, but reading and listening are key.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
So that wraps up this week's episode. We do have next week the final chapter of our read-along for Outlander, chapter 41, From the Womb of the Earth?
I think it's The Womb of the Earth.
Something about a womb and the earth.
And the earth.
So please read the final chapter again and join us next week as we discuss it and kind of maybe talk about what's to come.
And our friend of the show, Linnea's back.
She is back. We know you love her and her husky Kathleen Turner voice.
So thank you again for listening. We look forward to our next episode.
Visit our website at www.outlanderpod.com. Follow us on Twitter at @outlanderpod. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/outlanderpod. Or email us at outlanderpod@gmail.com.
I dreamt it last night that my young